Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing a wide range of research projects in which our academics are currently involved. With me today is Dr. Everaldo Attard. He's a senior lecturer from the Institute of Agriculture here at the University. He's a lecturer in aromatic and medicinal plants and agricultural chemistry. He did a Bachelor in Pharmacy, a pharmacy degree here in Malta, followed by a Master's in Science, Agriculture and Veterinary Pharmacy, and then went on to gain his PhD in 2001. His main research interests can be encompassed really in the economic evaluation of aromatic and medicinal plants. And he's here today to talk to us about an Interreg project entitled AtmosNet, which concerned, if I've understood correctly, the use of monitoring of pollen over specific areas of the southeastern Mediterranean to give an indication of climate change. Welcome, Dr. Attard.
Thank you.
So what sparked off, really, this project in the first instance?
Pollen are important indicators for several systems. And as there was a study previously in Malta which considered pollens for medical purposes, we wish to extend this to other areas, particularly agriculture and also desertification issue.
Obviously, you weren't going to do this on your own. This is an Interreg, interregional project, and you had partners. Who were they, and why did you actually choose these particular
partners? In fact, this was an Interreg 3B project involving the eastern Mediterranean, and as partners, with partners from southern part of Italy, particularly Rome, Naples, and Sicily, and from Greece, we had Thessaloniki. There were both institutions, governmental institutions involved, particularly from the Italian partners, and we've got also universities involved, particularly Thessaloniki, Sicily, and Malta, of course.
Sometimes the partners in these projects are partners because there's some personal contact, networking, other commitments between the academics themselves. In this case, it looks as though these areas were chosen for specific reasons, because they were in particular areas that you wanted to study. Is that the case?
Yes, actually. In fact, the main contact for all the partners was from the University of Perugia, with which we've got a very good relationship, actually. What happened is that Perugia University knew our interest in pollens. They knew also the interest of other partners. It involved the eastern part of the Mediterranean, and therefore they brought us together to work as a group. In fact, we learned that these partners were very good partners at the end of the day. But it was through Perugia that we got the contacts for this project.
And if you look on your website, you have some very interesting maps where you can sort of home in on these areas. And it's sort of indicative of the fact that you were actually interested in catching this particular geographical area.
Yes, in fact, that was one of our deliverables, the formulation of a website. We had an expert on that, Dr. Sivers Amit, and in fact, this was a very good aspect where the individual can go into the actual site and look at the pollen sampler and data related to the area and the pollen sampler pertaining to that. In fact, what we also looked at, using different pollen samplers, because there are two main types of pollen samplers, and that was a very good idea to determine the efficiency and the coherence that there is between these samplers as regards the region.
What were the main goals and the objectives, really, of this project? It was a short project, 1.5 years, which for something like this I imagine is not very long, but what were you hoping to achieve in that time?
Although we had this limitation, the time factor, we worked a lot on the desertification issue, which was the main issue for which we applied for the call. And basically we looked at other aspects. We looked at human health, and also agriculture. So the main aim was diversification, but apart from that, we went into other aspects which were secondary to the main aim stated in the project proposal.
So you were trying to set up monitoring sites in these different areas. I did see a picture of one of these monitoring machines on your site. Perhaps you could sort of describe exactly how they function, not in detail, obviously.
Primarily, what I would like to say also is that these are two samplers which were used practically for the project. They weren't set up before, as opposed to other partners who had already the samplers. So this was a positive for Malta, where we were introducing these samplers on the basis to study more the pollens. A sampler is set up in order to trap airborne pollens. Of course, when you are trapping pollens, apart from pollens, there are also other particles, dust, fungi, and so on. So there is a motor which actually sucks in the air at the normal rate of the human respiration, and therefore we could actually trap these pollens on adhesive tape, which was prepared for this type of sampling. And this ran over a period of a week. So each week we actually mounted a drum with this tape. And of course, by time this drum rotated, and we were collecting these pollens over a 7-day period. Of course, after the 7 days elapsed, then we had to replace the drum with a fresh tape, and we actually cut this tape into day periods, and we can examine the actual pollens that were precipitated at a particular time, not just the day, because we could read 2-hourly samples. So it's more precise in that respect.
And then everybody would have taken away their own samples and done the work in their own laboratories to check, you know, obviously what the samples contained, or were they sent to some sort of a central place?
No, in fact, all the work was done at the individual labs. We had our own labs, the Italians had their own labs, and even the Greeks. So basically, once you get this tape, you cut it and mount it on slides, you stain it, and each partner reads their own slides. What we did also, in order to have a uniform counting procedure, we did also ring tests, where slides were rotated between these partners, and we read them, and therefore we could determine how these partners are reading the slides and what is coming out of that. So that was a sort of quality control, quality assurance for the actual testing method.
We're talking, in the beginning when I was describing the project, we spoke about climate change. This has become a sort of bit of a buzzword, obviously, in these last years. What kind of changes in the climate were you considering in your research project, really?
Yeah, climate change can be related to temperature changes. As one might know, different temperatures will induce flowering at a particular time and period. So flowering basically depends on light and also temperature. So by having a different temperature, for example, if the temperature gets higher and higher, flowers will start flowering at an earlier period. So flowering, all right, we can actually predict the time when some allergies, human allergies, can start, all right, can shift. Instead of starting in spring, they might start in late winter. And apart from that, we can predict what species, plant species, are going to actually be pollinated and develop into fruit later on, if we look at the agricultural point of view. From the temperature change, all right, there is a change not just in the temperature getting higher, but also, or the glaciers, but also there is an effect on agriculture and other systems. We start having pollination at an earlier stage. There is an effect on human health at an earlier stage during the year. And also you get earlier crops, and sometimes this might be detrimental, because you might get some pests and diseases that will attack the crop when it is at an immature stage.
One doesn't normally sort of think about desert in terms of Malta, Italy, Greece. Was it something that you was of interest that you could actually measure at all in these particular areas?
Yes, in fact, desertification is a very wide term. We usually understand desertification is the formation of deserts, but it's more than that. When you've got a change in the soil structure, in the soil composition, in the flora within the soil, and the plants that can be grown in the soil or those that thrive in the wild, that's part of the desertification process. In fact, even the scarcity of water, you've got plants that can thrive with no water or little water. So the process is not just the formation of deserts from soils. So the issue is not that simple. It's more complicated, and therefore we are looking at species that are affected by this change.
In southern Spain, for example, they are literally worried about sort of desert creeping up from the south. Would that be the same thing in the eastern Mediterranean, or is it more, as you say, something about drying of the soils and this sort of effect rather than the actual, what we imagine as land that becomes useless to agriculture?
Both of them are linked together, because as these changes come about, you've got crops that might not thrive anymore in the soils, and the soils, if they lose even their microorganisms, and the microbes that actually digest the nutrients, then you've got a dead soil. And the dead soil is usually the precursor, shall we say, to the actual desert. So it's a sort of desert in a different reality, not the desert that we've seen in Africa, for example, but it's a sort of desert that actually affects the microorganisms and the general population, after all.
Before we move on talking about the subject of pollen monitoring in the Eastern Mediterranean, I'd like to remind listeners that this is Research Matters on Campus FM. And I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I'm talking today to Dr. Everaldo Attard from our Institute of Agriculture here at the University. When you do have a project like this, which obviously requires an awful lot of work, at the end of the day, how do you move on after you've got the data, you analyze the data, and then what do you do after that?
In fact, if you leave the readings just as pollen counts, they are worthless, and in fact, even scientists will find it difficult to actually interpret the data. The data has to be inputted into models, what we call models, where we can actually transform the raw data into more useful data, where, for example, when it comes to prediction of crops, just from the pollens, you cannot predict crop development. You need to add the season factor, the temperature factor, humidity factor, which all together will give us an equation that will guide us to the actual result at the end of the day. So from the raw data, you cannot move on just by stating the raw data and so on. So basically these models, where you've got models for human health, for agriculture and desertification, you can actually work out these data. Apart from that, you need also to rely on past data. In fact, most of our partners have got past history of data collection dating back 20, 25 years, and there can be the correlation of the past data with this data. And although we haven't got this history, or through the correlation between partners, we can actually predict what happened 20 years ago here in Malta, and we can predict what might happen in the near future.
With this data, you used, I think, a computer platform for AtmosNet that then was accessible or could provide data for the other universities and institutions involved.
Apart from the website that we've mentioned earlier, we had also the responsibility to set up this sort of platform to get all the partners together, and using one platform in order to input the data. In fact, all partners inputted their data from their stations or their labs, and they were centralized here locally in Malta. And after they were gathered, they were sent to Rome, where they actually transformed into polling counts. That was part of our responsibility to be the interface between the partners when it comes to the electronic transfer of data.
If we can focus a little bit on Malta. Again, from your website, I noticed that you have chosen two particular areas of the Maltese Islands, the two extremes, the northern and the southern extreme. Perhaps you could explain why you did that, or I presume it was done on purpose.
In fact, we took the two extremes. The first extreme was at Massochlock, San Lucian Fort, and the other one was at Tajordan in Gozo. In fact, these are the two farthest points that we've got on the Maltese Islands. And since we were looking also at transboundary pollens, that is, pollens coming from outside our territory, then we had to set them as far as possible from each other and reaching being the first points to collect pollens that are coming from outside our actual region. And basically, we had very interesting results from that because even relating that to the wind direction, so we were looking also at wind direction, we could determine from where these pollens were coming. If they were coming from the south, from the northwest, or from within the islands. So practically, we can correlate also the types of pollens and from where they were actually coming.
Are you able to tell us where they did come from, in actual fact, the ones prevalent in the islands and the ones that came from outside our boundaries?
For example, a very typical example which we actually studied was the horse chestnut, which is found abundantly in Sicily. And in fact, we found pollens of the horse chestnut here locally. So perhaps some people might be allergic to horse chestnut pollens, and we might not know that because before this, we didn't know that pollens come from Sicily. Particularly from the south, we get a lot of dust, a lot of sand dust. So, and even in samples, you can notice parts of insects that are not found in Malta, but for example, they come from the desert. And you can find these parts of the insects, although it is sometimes difficult to identify these parts. But of course, having the sampler, the Massochlock sampler, facing North Africa, we could actually
good guess at what they were. That's interesting. When you've got this information, I mean, who would you envisage really would be the beneficiaries of all this research that you've been doing and the data that you've been collecting?
Yeah, in fact, on a European basis, there is a European network for pollen collection and pollen analysis. In fact, this has moved us to a next step where we are associating ourselves with this pollen network. And in fact, this is beneficial not just to the Maltese population, but also all the travelers from Europe that come over to Malta. This is very important because some people are so allergic that they need to look at the pollen levels before they even come or move to another country.
I presume that you have been doing this pollen monitoring here in the eastern region, the eastern Mediterranean region. I presume that there's other pollen monitoring going on in different areas of other areas of Europe.
Yeah, in fact, this place does on the map, actually, not just the map on the website, but also on the European map, because we are the southernmost border of the European Union, basically, and therefore there's great interest of pollens that are coming from North Africa, although there are other countries bordering in the Mediterranean, the North Africa, Spain, France, Italy, Cyprus, Greece, and so on. But we are in a unique position because we are a sort of a holistic test bed. We're a small island, a group of islands, and if you're going to carry out tests, having a small island, actually you've got a sample size that is sufficient to cover a whole region. To cover, for example, the whole of Italy or the whole of Spain, it would be impossible. But in our reality, it's possible.
It's a sort of microcosm.
That's it, yes.
A complete whole, but a rather small one.
Yes, that's it.
Also, you were talking before about the idea of sharing your samples around your own group of partners so that there could be sort of a quality control or perhaps a calibration exercise going on, so that at the end of the day you're coming out with some kind of common approach. Within a European context, is it possible to imagine that there would be a sort of standard approach to monitoring of pollen? Because I would imagine that would be quite an important issue.
Yes, in fact, this was one of our aims, basically, at the end, to set up standards in order to set up the best way how to place a sampler, where to place the sampler, how to collect pollens, and so on. As I have highlighted earlier, there are two main samplers. There is a British sampler and an Italian sampler, and those are the two that exist worldwide. And you've got different countries using different samplers. And also when it comes to counting, there are different methods. In fact, there is a lot of research on the different counting methods and the different samplers. But basically, we found through our own research that there aren't that much differences when you use these different samplers and the different counting methods. In fact, the Greeks and ourselves were using the British sampler and the British type of counting, while the Italians, in their three sites, they were using the Italian sampler and the Italian type of counting. And we found no statistical difference between the results, even in the ring test, because that ring test actually reflected how the pollens were collected and how they were counted.
That in itself was an important discovery, really, if you're going to sort of go Europe-wide and say, look, this is what we've been doing. And a piece of research like this, when you've got your results, you've got your website, obviously, that's important, so that other people can come in and look at your data, look at your analyses. But if there is something that comes out of this research and you feel something needs to be done because otherwise your projections are telling you that within 10 years this is going to happen, or that kind of weed is going to take over in a particular area, or something along those lines, is it possible to actually get at the people who actuate the change to the policymakers?
Yes, in fact, actually, from the results we got, we couldn't come out with concrete conclusions. You need years and years in order to get a more concrete result. Once you've got that, of course, this will be the initial step to tell the policymakers what should be done and how to go about it. The problem is worldwide. This certification problem is worldwide, so it's not just an issue of Europe or an issue of Malta. Things have to be done immediately. Not we shouldn't wait for the whole set of data to be placed on the table in order to take action. Action should be taken immediately. So, but this information will continue to substantiate the need to take action in the right direction, basically.
Because getting through to people in Malta is difficult enough. You need a sort of quite a lobby to be able to enlist sort of public opinion, and you need to write articles and send out leaflets and really get yourselves noticed, which is not, academics very often feel that that's not really their job. Their job is to do the research. But then on the other hand, if you've done the research and you're not actually going to be able to get your message across, it's a fairly academic sort of issue, really.
We try to set up the website as clear as possible to the general public so that they will be aware of the actual situation of pollens and so on. But of course, this won't reach everybody, in fact. So there are leaflets and CDs that were even presented during research evenings and so on, even held locally by the Malta Council of Science and Technology, basically. And we were actually there trying to even get in the youngsters to get to know more about the effects of desertification and how pollen can help in this. So we're trying to target the younger population in order to be more aware of the situation, because there is sort of dissemination to the parents and their carers. So this will actually has a domino effect in that respect.
Mm-hmm. And as we said at the beginning, this was a short 1.5 year project. Now that it's over, have you been able to continue good relations, academic relations, research relations with these institutions or not?
Yes, in fact, the project, although it has ended in December 2007, basically, we still continue with the pollen sampling and collecting of samples. The problem in this issue is that you've got a lot of human resources involved. There's a lot of time to count, particularly the slides and so on. So basically, we're thriving with that, and we're trying to keep up with the other partners on this issue. Of course, since the project ended in 2007, we're still collecting the data. It is not made public yet, but we believe that at some point it should be made public as we go along.
We run out of time. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Everaldo Attard from the Institute of Agriculture, for coming to talk to us today about AtmosNet. And I recommend that everyone Googles AtmosNet on the computer and has a jolly good look at your website, which I think is excellent.
I would like to thank the National Authority for financing the project and support us throughout the 1.5 years of the project.
If you would like further details about the University of Malta's research projects or any other information, please access our website at www.um.edu.mt. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.